have a couple of important announcements, but I was told that there are one or two instructors here who have classes here and wanted to make an announcement at the beginning. Is that correct?
Yeah. ERS 102, Environmental Geology of Maine. If you haven't signed in, would you please see me after the lecture? Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Anyone else? Okay, great. Well, welcome to the Socialist and Marxist Studies lecture series. And we have them Thursdays at 12:30 in the Bangor Room. We've had them since 1988 every semester. So many of you know the name for the series. It's named after an academic minor on campus, Marxist Socialist Studies. It's also co-sponsored by the Maine Peace Action Committee, mainly a student group that meets every Tuesday at 3:30 in the Maples Building, the Memorial Union Events and Activities here, and the College of Liberal Arts and Sciences. Just had a couple of important announcements to make. Many of you know we had an incredible speaker last week, Richard Wolff, who came from New York and spoke at 12:30 and at 7:30 at night gave the Schoenberger lecture, both of which will be available very soon on DVD and will be also posted on the internet. Tonight we're actually showing an amazing film, Capitalism Hits the Fan, that I've seen, and it's a lecture that he gave. It's really extremely engaging and informative. It's going to be in Little Hall 110 at 7 o'clock. So I'll pass around a few flyers after the film. We'll have a discussion. So you're welcome to attend. I have two announcements on the series that are very important and that we've never had happen before. All of our programs, as you know, this semester have been great. They've packed rooms and really excellent programs that with lively discussions. We had two more big programs listed this semester, people coming from out of state. Next Thursday, we had listed Steve Brower, who's coming from New York. He has a brand new book that just came out on practicing revolution, practicing medicine in Cuba and Venezuela. And I found out 2 days ago they have a he has a family crisis with a six-month grandson who is today, in fact, going through some life-threatening major operations. So he waited till the last moment and finally felt that he could not leave. So we're going to try to reschedule him next semester. And then in 2 weeks, November 10th, we had down I Go On Singing, a tribute to Paul Robeson with Anthony Brown, who's a very famous international singer and performer. And he was going to, in the evening, do a major performance in Hauck Auditorium as well. For completely different reasons, having to do with something at the University of Maine, they've had to reschedule that for next February. So, and he'll come for Black History Month. And what that means is the next 2 weeks, we will not have programs, unfortunately. So this will be our last program for the fall. We'll meet in about 3 weeks to plan our spring series. So if any of you have ideas for programs, please feel free to contact me or any of our other key people. Okay, so today, you can see we have a very topical, very important program. Living downstairs, downstream two, we called it, because we had a program on the fall on this topic, updates on the Old Town Dump and the University of Maine. And many of you were at the hearing, a big hearing on Monday night, so you know how important this is. We had listed John Banks, who's the director of Natural Resources Department for the Penobscot Nation is extremely knowledgeable on this issue. He has to be on this issue right now testifying in Augusta. And Darren Ranko is a professor here who also moderated last time. He's in Augusta. So they're having hearings right now on this issue. So fortunately, Paul Schrader, who's worked for years on this issue and is an Orono resident and is a member of Trash Trackers Network, could be here as one of our resource people panelists. And the other is we're fortunate to have Ed Spencer, who's a West Old Town resident and is very knowledgeable and has been very involved in this issue. So they'll organize the program, and then we'll have a lot of time for questions and input from you.
There are 6 seats up here.
Great. First of all, I'm glad that everybody came. As Doug said, this is a very timely issue. And what we want to do is start with our self-introductions and give a little bit of background as to our involvement with this, and then go on into these relations between the university and the landfill. As Doug said, I'm Paul Schrader. I live in Orono. I've been working alongside of Ed as well as a large group of other people in the region since 2004, when this landfill issue first arose as a threat to our communities. I am sorry that John Banks, we were going to kind of do a replay, an update of what we did last spring, and John Banks was here and Darren Ranko was the moderator, and they're not here, and unfortunately they weren't able to provide statements. So what we'd like to do after Ed and I get done giving our overviews is to open this up to as broad of a discussion as possible. And for those of you who were at the hearing, it was a public meeting on Monday evening at the Black Bear Inn, you'll know that there were a lot of constraints on the discussion there. So we think that this would be another forum to carry on the discussions that were started there and talk about what they imply for what our responsibilities here are on campus as well as in our communities. So as soon as we're done, we've asked a couple people. I'm not sure they're here to make if they had short statements to make, to please make them. And otherwise, we'd like to open it up to questions and comments from everyone. The first thing I'd like to ask is there anyone here from the University of Maine administration who's been related to the economic development or pipeline projects, or anyone here representing Casella? Yes.
Environmental technician from Juniper Ridge Landfill.
Okay, and from. Okay. There might be questions that come up that you might want to be responsive to, and certainly after we get done, you're welcome to make a statement if you want to on any points that we've talked about or any questions that come up. So thanks for being here. First of all, our panel is called Living Downstream, and in fact, well, of course, we took that from a prominent book in the environmental area, living downstream. But here we are living downstream. The Juniper Ridge Landfill is about 6 miles north of campus, and the wetlands that surround it drain directly into Pushaw Stream and to Birch Stream, both of which are tributaries of the Stillwater River, which passes by campus. So we do live downstream. And the landfill and its proposed expansion, at this point, it's a 30-year it's a project that's going to go on, that's planned for 30 years, but it's going to be there forever. So we do live downstream. Second point, we really can't give a detailed background on the whole landfill process and all the different pieces that went with that. We certainly can be responsive to questions, but there's one point that I think everyone should know right up front, is that this landfill is a very unique facility. It's the first and only, well, it's not the only, because there's there are actually now two more state-owned landfills. But basically, this is the only state-owned landfill that's permitted and operating. And the reason that it's important to know that it's a state-owned landfill is that the state acquired it with the specific purpose of fulfilling waste policy mandates in Maine law that say there can be no new commercial landfills. Now, that's being under consideration by the current administration. The point is that without new commercial landfill capacity, the state can control or has the power to control what goes into that facility. Commercial landfills and the state landfill are subject to the United States Constitution's Commerce Clause that more or less says there has to be free trade across state boundaries in all commodities, and that includes garbage and trash as a commodity. So one of the only legal ways that the state can control what goes into the state into landfills in Maine is to actually own the landfill and enter the market as what they call a market participant. So theoretically, and it hasn't worked out this way at all, but theoretically, the state bought the landfill in order to exercise its ability to control what could go in there. That's a basic piece of background that you do have to have. Another piece is that the state turned over operation of this to Casella Waste Systems for $25 or $26 million for a 30-year contract, of which Casella stands to profit somewhere around $1 billion. So the state is getting something like a 2% cut of the deal that Casella has made with the state. This is one of the, let's say, there are ample opportunities for research here, ongoing by you as students and faculty at the university, and certainly looking into the finances of the trash industry as part of it and how it relates to this facility. I'd just like to make a quick footnote on Monday's meeting. Monday was the public meeting to tell us and to hear from us about the implications of the expansion that's being planned. It's planned to go from 10 currently permitted 10 million to 30 million cubic yards. Now, the owner of the landfill, or the agent for the owner, is the State Planning Office. Darryl Brown is the head of the State Planning Office, and he made a statement on Monday to the following extent. The application before the Department of Environmental Protection is the first step in what will be a very lengthy process to expand the existing facility. Well, actually, that presumes the case. And I'd like to rephrase that, that this application that they've submitted is actually the last step in what's already been a very long process before we tell the state and Casella that we are not going to allow them to expand this landfill. Now, the topic today is the relations between the university and the landfill. And when we were looking into this presentation today, we kind of thought, well, what are these relations and how is the university connected? And just for now, I came up with seven different topics, and I'll read them down, and then I'll go into each one of them briefly. We've all heard that the university has a contract to buy landfill gas from the landfill. So that's the landfill gas contract is the first one. Now, the landfill gas contract also has a phase two involved. Now, the phase one is scheduling to bring landfill gas from the landfill to the steam plant to burn to make heat. Okay, so that's a fairly simple concept. Phase two is actually embedded in the contract for phase one, and phase two, in essence, proposes a what's called a cogeneration plant. And that's a second, larger plant that would generate both electricity and heat. And although it said, well, we don't know exactly what the status of that is and where it's going to go and so forth, that project has been conceived for the new development up past Hilltop, what they call the Penny Road concept. Also, people know that the university has recently entered into a contract with Casella for zero sort, what they call zero sort recycling. And you know, we'll raise some questions about that. The university also is a tenant for its research projects at the Red Shield plant or Old Town Fuel and Fiber, and that's connected to the landfill because of a fuel contract that had to do with the land, the establishing of the landfill and providing fuel for the facility in Old Town. The university also sits on a important economic development board for the city of Old Town, which is also looking into the cogeneration plant and other projects like that. The university also conducts studies that are related to the landfill, and also, and possibly this is a footnote, but a prominent graduate of the university's, I'm not sure, I think chemical engineering, but I'm not totally positive, Pete Correll, retired as the chair of GP when GP was sold to Koch Industries, and he's well recognized on campus as a philanthropist and donor to the university, but I think it should be known that the deal under which GP basically closed the mill and turned the facility over to Red Shield, also and sold the facility to Koch Industries originally, was a deal that went along with Pete Correll's retirement from GP, and his retirement package was $145 million. Looking at some of these, all of these are complicated relationships, and they all certainly deserve a closer look. I'm going to just give an update on a couple of them and suggest a couple of places where people could go from here. The main one would be the landfill gas pipeline and gas supply contract. We invited Janet Waldron, who is the university's point contact on this, to be here today and present, and I think that she had a previous engagement, and I've talked to her a couple of times over the past 2 months, and have, come on in, I also sent her an email yesterday that I didn't get a reply to, but basically, the landfill gas contracts and supply contract seems to be on hold. As of September 1st, they were renegotiating the gas prices. It turns out that the supply of natural gas in the United States has caused gas prices to go way down, which has made the gas pipeline contract uneconomical from the terms that were originally conceived in the contract. I was told that at the beginning of September that a newly renegotiated contract or the new terms would be done by the end of September. I was told at the beginning of October that we would be hearing at the end of this month, and I was told nothing when I contacted them yesterday. So we aren't quite sure where this stands. However, there were certain stipulations in that contract that included design and construction deadlines, and basically by this time, they were conceiving that all permits would be in hand and that construction would be underway for the contract, for the pipeline. And as far as we know, no permits are in hand and that there is no plan to get going on the construction. So that's the update on the gas pipeline. If someone else has other information, in fact, on anything that we say, if someone else has other information, please bring it forward because we only have our own small windows to look at the world. On phase two, the reason that phase two is important is that the university has claimed, and Casella has claimed, that they can provide the landfill gas supply to phase one on the basis of the existing footprint or the existing size of, or the size of that the landfill will be if they fill it up to their current permit. However, they haven't made the same statement for phase two. So people really should be concerned that, in a sense, the university is in a position of enabling Casella in their expansion plans through phase two. Phase two will require the expansion as far as we can tell. However, the university and Casella seem to have we've heard it spoken, but I've never seen it written, an arrangement whereby Casella is not using the gas pipeline contract as part of its justification for its expansion. And so if you look into their expansion proposal or their public benefits for expansion proposal, you'll only find one footnote that says we have a gas to energy project under consideration. That's all that they've used for that. On Zero Sort, we have some questions about that. When Casella spoke on Monday, they talked about their universal waste disposal, and we know their single sort facilities down in Massachusetts. The representative Casella clearly said, we sell the remains of our recycling operations to in the United States customers. Well, I believe that just about as well as I believe that everything they're putting in the landfill is coming from in-state sources. I think we do need to have an audit of where this trash is coming from and where it's going. For them to prominently say we sell to only in U.S. sources is to get them off the hook of third world dumping of some of this very toxic material. Where it goes after they sell it to their in-country sources, we don't know. I'll defer on some of these other topics. That we do know that the president of the university sits as a permanent and official voting ex officio member on Old Town's committee that's called Great Works Development LLC, and also that the assistant vice president of the university sits on the president sits on the board of managers, and the assistant vice president sits on the actual functioning board of that organization. So the university is well involved with Old Town on their economic development processes. I guess I'll just try to close up here. I think that there's an opportunity here for people to examine closely all aspects of the university's relationships with the landfill, with the mill, with Casella, and to really try to figure out how it works. There are some very important research that I think has to be done. If people know how this is solved, please let us know. But I think there has to be a better way of disposing of sewage sludge and other kinds of contaminated organic materials. As of this point, there are very few places for those things to go, and they're going to come to the landfill, and they're going to be the basis for making gas. It's not a very safe or efficient way of creating energy out of organic material. There's probably some way to transform that material, let's say, and burn it with proper emission controls, might get more energy in a safer way than creating landfill fill gas out of it. Finally, the question was raised at the hearing the other night, is Casella for sale? These licenses, like the license that Casella is going for, are worth millions and millions of dollars, in this case hundreds of millions of dollars. The companies can boost their bottom lines by getting these licenses in hand. I think it's a good topic to look into what exactly are the finances of Casella and what are the relations between the university and those finances. I could elaborate at length and would be happy to with questions, but thanks for your attention.
Thanks, Paul, and thanks, Professor Allen, for inviting me to comment on these vital issues. We have an opportunity to engage at this exact time and influence those in power to adapt a more beneficial approach to waste disposal and energizing UMaine. Having spent many hours at meetings where Old Town officials committed their support to the landfill gas, the UMaine project, I cannot be pleased with the process or outcome. When a public institution of higher education had many meetings with Old Town's elected representatives and the operator of Maine's first state-owned landfill, right, so these are all public entities, and then refused to divulge information requests to inquiring citizens, something's wrong. I hold Casella most responsible for this, as public involvement has proven to be loathsome in their eyes. Upon further reflection, it occurs to me that this plan to heat and someday even electrify this campus with landfill gas from waste from far away is a classic case of mutual greenwashing. For some time now, there has been a competition of sorts amongst colleges and universities to outgreen each other and thus attract more like-minded students. This is not a bad thing at all. Who can argue with the necessity of becoming a more efficient society, reducing our carbon footprint, and saving money through better building practices? The problems arise when the initiatives are not sincere. When one of the partners fails to diligently pursue their obligations under an agreement. This, in my opinion, is Casella unveiled. After enticing Old Town into spending upwards of $80,000 in legal expenses developing a contract with Casella and UMaine, Casella has failed to pursue the permits necessary to build the 8-mile gas pipeline. They say low costs of natural gas make the project unaffordable at this time, and I just wonder if anybody in the audience, when we get done, knows how much natural gas prices have actually dropped in the last year or two. What has gained in value are the green reputations of both Casella and UMaine. That's why I'm calling it greenwashing. Casella gets to tell their stockholders how clean and progressive they are, and UMaine can trumpet their green campus. I hold Casella once again mostly responsible because in my opinion, this is just the latest of their energy schemes they have run up the flagpole and never delivered on. Maybe I should have said at the beginning, I've lived in West Old Town out in the woods since 1977 or 78. I actually coached the UMaine club lacrosse team in those years. And it's been a great place to live, to raise my children. And I know a lot of people in industry might label me as another naysaying NIMBY, but I think there are better solutions to heating campus, which would truly put UMaine far ahead of the pack pursuing any energy solutions, much as they are, I think, with pursuing the offshore wind. And that is, UMaine owns thousands of acres of woodland, okay? A lot of it's been donated. A lot of it was harvested heavily before it was donated. So now you're to the point where it's a bunch of small trees and saplings coming up. Well, there are ways to manage a forest to maximize the carbon sequestration, which means basically put the most fiber into trees in the fastest way possible, okay? And if UMaine would adapt intensive silvicultural practices in their own forests and feed a cogenerator plant, it doesn't have to be on a massive scale. You know, it could be something to start with and produce some heat, produce some electricity that way. I think they could really set a good example and be at the forefront of new technology. They've got the land base. They've got an excellent forestry school, excellent engineering school. And I think our challenge here is to get students and faculty involved and more aware of this landfill and what it means for the future. And I think Monday night was a great start. This is as well. We can make a difference. For, like Paul said, for 8 years, a group of us have been meeting regularly, but informally, we haven't really had an appointed leader. It's kind of distributed leadership, and we've gotten a lot done, and we've learned a lot of things, and I think when we speak, people in power do listen, but we need public opinion is what really affects change, and I think that's what's happening right now is we're having a chance to get together and just raise awareness about this, and hopefully there's some handouts up here, and if you have time to get engaged, do some homework, read up on the DEP website. And if you could offer some comments to DEP about this public benefits application that Casella has in currently, you'd be surprised how much good over the years some of these comments have done, where we haven't actually won the battle. But you know, when Casella complains, for example, about these Chapter 418 rules being too restrictive for them, well, that I know for a fact that that we've had some influence on making those rules stricter than they were originally proposed. So I think, why don't we just open it up to questions from the audience? Anyone wants to make a brief statement? Joanne?
Can I just indicate that the addresses to which you need to submit information are on one of the sheets on the table?
Maybe we should just pass these out.
You have 3 weeks.
That's a good idea.
Is that they're specified, the requested deadline is that you submit those comments right away. So don't wait. If you don't even find it, just
get this one first.
That's a great point, Joanna. Thanks. And I think that cutoff date for them accepting comments is November 21st. Julie?
Back to really the notion of the university and what's at stake here. I'd like